lives as full of meaning and purpose. That is, they rated on a scale their agreement with statements indicative of meaning such as, "My personal existence is purposeful and meaningful." The results from this study supported the assertion that people find thinking about an apocalypse meaningful. The participants who read the article about signs of a coming apocalypse reported significantly higher levels of perceived meaning than did the participants in the control condition who read an article about signs of the death of the traditional bookstore. The idea of an apocalypse may be scary, but it also generates perceptions of meaning in life. Case File 6. Negan. Travis Langley. Negan rules by fear, or by manipulating people into thinking he's the only thing keeping them alive. They worship him. For him, it's all about ego. Paul Jesus Monroe. Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. Diplomat Henry Kissinger. Stronger, smarter, saner, and more in control than the governor, according to creator Robert Kirkman, the man known as Negan wages a war worse than anything Woodbury's leader ever manages. The Saviors, Negan's band of over 100 survivors, eliminate walkers surrounding communities and demand half of those communities' rations in return, whether the communities welcome this arrangement or not. When people resist, when Negan feels the Saviors have been shortchanged, his men kill to make a point. Negan even orders a man to stab a friend for fear of what the Saviors will do to them all. He's a character who clearly is thriving after this apocalypse, says the actor Andrew J. West, Gareth. It sounds like he's happy this happened. It seems that way, the way he lives his life and treats people. You'd have to be a sadist, I think, in order to enjoy or appreciate a world like that. But if you're a guy like Negan, who doesn't really have empathy or really care about other people, you might do pretty well. How does Negan rank on the dark tetrad, that checklist for evil? Psychopathy. He is callous and short on empathy, even though he denies it. His post-apocalyptic actions are antisocial by most people's standards, although probably not by his own, because as he sees it, he sets the standards. He makes the rules. Negan is more of a high-functioning psychopath, the kind who might have put his boldness to great use as a pre-apocalyptic firefighter, soldier, surgeon, reporter, civil servant, or master chef. Machiavellianism. Unlike the deceitful governor, Negan tells the truth as he sees it. Still, he believes in ruling through fear, intimidation, and other forms of manipulation. He therefore exhibits a different set of Machiavellian attitudes. Narcissism. Ego can get in the way of his better judgment. Negan's a bully. Vain, selfish, and not prone to noticing the real damage he's causing even to himself. He knows his way is best, and anything else is idiotic. To be sure, though, he accomplishes much during the post-apocalypse. Thus, although some degree of his egotism seems lifelong, recent circumstances may have inflated his ego. Sadism. No matter how often Negan says he does not enjoy cruelty, his actions suggest otherwise. His creativity in devising new ways to hurt people, his thin smile when picking punishments, and the severity of his cruel and unusual punishments, using an iron to burn half of a man's face off, goes beyond making a point. Negan's big-picture goals, though, are not about hurting people. He perceives his brutality as a tool for the greater good. Even so, saying that his bloody bat Lucille loves bashing heads reflects his own glee. As to whether Negan is evil or how much, there is no simple answer. He shows potential for insight that the governor never achieves and Claimer Joe never would want. At the climax of their war, he finally really hears Rick's message. "I've had it all wrong," Negan realizes. "I've been acting like a hungry dog, hoarding supplies, pushing others away. For safety, for my people." An epiphany washes over him. Instead of building a rigid system in which survivors can exist if they do what he wants, he should have applied his resources and skills toward a far greater goal, re-establishing civilization itself. They can create a new way of life. Case File 7. The Whisperers. Travis Langley. People wearing dead people's faces. Morgan Jones. It isn't what they say about you, it's what they whisper. Actor Errol Flynn. A survivor named Marco, while hunkering down to hide, hears words whispered among passing walkers. He panics and abandons an injured friend. There were whispers, and I was afraid, he says, lying terrified in the infirmary after another man, Dante, finds him. Rick says, the guy has clearly lost his mind. Dante soon encounters these talking walkers himself. Talkers kill his companions. Dante kills talkers and then stands in shock. They were talking. But once he spies a seam on the back of one body's head, he discovers that these were living humans, wearing costumes made from corpse skins. Another corpse costume survivor arrives to point a shotgun and say, "Don't move." These are the Whisperers. Similarly to the way Rick, Glenn, and others have moved safely among walkers by wearing zombie gore, the Whisperers wear human skin, possibly from walkers, possibly from people skinned alive or those who died without turning. The dead accept them. The living fear them. Dante's captor warns, "You came into our land, killed our kind. Now we explore your land, learn about your people. You will see many of us. You will know us. You will fear us." A mask has might. When donning these disguises to affect others both dead and alive, the Whisperers may not have anticipated how it would affect themselves. A disguise can be liberating. Face paint or a feathered mask at Mardi Gras can help unleash hedonistic partying. Behind an avatar, the online anonymity can let one user share feelings too intimate to disclose in person, or turn someone else into a troublemaking troll. Anonymity in any form can lower inhibitions, disinhibition, by insulating a person against consequences, or reducing consciousness of oneself as an individual, de-individuation. Many situations de-individuate people, among them getting lost in a crowd. Whisperers start wearing corpse skins in order to get lost in walker crowds. A costume, a uniform, or any other outfit affects the way people act, think, and feel. For example, sports players wearing black uniforms get more penalties for aggressiveness compared with the players on other teams, and even compared with themselves when they don't wear black. The Whisperers don't just disguise themselves as walkers, they play the part. They are role-playing, adopting and acting out roles that can have personalities, motives, and actions different from their own. Continuously playing a role can be a tricky thing. Police officers who go deep undercover for long periods may have trouble defining themselves after a while. The Whisperers come to identify with walkers. They walk among the walkers for safety. Then, in time, they walk with the walkers for company. The skin makes the dead leave us alone. A Whisperer named Lydia explains, "We travel with them. They protect us, and we protect them." Final word. Thriving. Fight the dead. Fear the living. The tagline sounds cynical. Is The Walking Dead overall a pessimistic story or an optimistic one? Is there hope? Andrew J. West, Gareth. Absolutely. I think it is hopeful. And honest, too, because you do see so many different sides of humanity. But it's hopeful because you spend most of your time with good people who are still good, in spite of this world in which they live. So I think in that sense, it's definitely optimistic and hopeful. Good people, West says. Intriguing, believable characters whom people care about. John Russo calls them in this book's foreword, paradoxical as it might seem, the characters' flaws and mistakes make it easier for us to hope for them and for them to inspire us. If they can keep trying to do the right thing, so can we. So can other people we meet in this life. The fact that they're fictional gives us greater freedom to connect to them, no strings attached. We want heroes, But in this cynical age when social media and 24/7 news announce living heroes' every mistake, we need Sheriff Rick Grimes, not Dudley Do-Right, to show us that imperfect people can keep trying to do the right thing. Heroism is about standing up when it's hard, even dangerous, and it can cost us a lot. Heroes persist. Never give up, we expect them to say. And yet heroism is also about coming back from a fall. Descending into a dark place can bestow new respect for the light. I wanted to die for what I'd lost, Tyrese tells Noah. And later I was there for Judith when she needed me, and that wouldn't have happened if I'd just given up, if I hadn't chosen to live. The world we knew is gone, but keeping our humanity, that's a choice, Dale says, and many others echo his concern along the way. What does that really mean, though? Empathy, sympathy, looking out for others? It's not cold practicality. Rick considers killing Randall at the farm, but does not. He considers turning Michonne over to the governor, but does not. Why? Because either act would be inhuman. Existence means more than surviving. Throughout the Dark Tetrad, that four-part model of evil we've used to examine The Walking Dead's top troublemakers throughout this book, we see selfish motivations behind exploitative actions. The hero can be tempted and sometimes may fall, but he or she keeps coming back. Others see heroism in Rick Grimes where he does not. Even when Rick thinks he can betray Michonne, everyone else has faith that he will not. I believe in Rick Grimes, Maggie declares during a later conflict against a more rational villain, and she's not alone. We, the readers, viewers, game players, and cosplayers, believe in them. Individually, some will fail. We know, but we have faith in the greater group. Like our hope for humanity, we want people to endeavor to do more right than wrong. After these characters lose the farm and the prison, after they face claimers and cannibals and hospital cops, after they suffer loss upon loss, but before they finally reach a safe zone, a community where they can live, a different tagline appears, one with an inherent promise that no matter how much there is to dread, life can become better and bigger. Beyond fear, find hope. We would not fear for these characters so strongly if we did not hope for them as well. They keep going without knowing for certain what will happen, and so do we. When situations seem darkest, we can look for signs that things will brighten. In the darkness, every light stands out. We hope for hope, and that keeps us going until we find it. We can do more than survive. We can thrive. This has been a Highbridge production, read by Adam Verner and Allison Ryan. Copyright 2015 by Travis Langley. Published by arrangement with Sterling Publishing Company. This book is an independent publication and is not associated with or authorized, licensed, sponsored, or endorsed by any person or entity affiliated with the well-known The Walking Dead or TV shows or movies. All trademarks are the property of their respective owners. Such trademarks are used for editorial purposes only, and the publisher makes no claim of ownership and shall acquire no right, title, or interest in such trademarks by virtue of this publication. Recording copyright 2018 by Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.